Welcome back to the latest edition of Until Saturday. I'm Ari Wasserman, joined by Chris Vanini. We've got a spring portal preview, which means that Max Olson is here. We're also going to talk to Penn State beat writer Audrey Snyder to talk about Drew Aller, James Franklin, and Penn State's place in college football right now. And what can college football learn from WrestleMania? I can't name more than three wrestlers, but we do have somebody on the show that is very, very into wrestling, and he'll have to walk us through that. But apparently there's some PR stuff and interesting dynamics that are kind of intersecting between those two things that maybe college football could learn from. Be sure to follow the podcast on Apple wherever you listen to your podcast. Please help support the show by dropping a 5-star review. If you leave a question with that review, we'll do our best to answer it on the show. Leave us a voicemail on our Until Saturday phone line for future mailbag episodes. That's 316-462-9852. Again, that is 316-462-9852. We always love to hear your voices, and the participation really adds to the show, makes it feel like a community, and is greatly appreciated. I think we're going to play one here later on in the show. Or right now, actually. Max, how are we doing today? Good to see you again.
Hey, good to see you. Good to be here.
Good to see you, Carl.
I'm not here to talk about wrestling, and I cannot name three wrestlers, so
you can
if that's what you booked me for.
Yeah. Honestly, I think I could name three.
I can name three.
The Rock.
Yes.
John Cena.
Former Miami football player. John Cena also played college football. There are ties here to college football. Those are all former players.
Is the Undertaker movie stars, Ari? Can you name some real wrestlers? Come on, man.
Is the Undertaker still active?
No, but he did appear this weekend, but he also played college sports. I think basketball. So there
you go. I used to live with a wrestling fanatic. And he was watching it all the time, but I never absorbed anything. Chris covered WrestleMania. He had some really good coverage from the event, if you're into that sort of thing, on The Athletic. Welcome to the show, Chris. Thanks for coming on.
Good to be here. Right as we're about to hit a crazy time in the college football calendar. It's been weird. Basketball and the NFL draft kind of like sucks up a lot of the spring football attention. And so now we're out of that. We've got the draft in a few weeks. But more importantly, we've got the spring portal about to open here, and that's why we have the portal authority Max Olson here with us.
You know, that sounds kind of like a train station. Did you guys ever put that together? Remember when I made that joke before,
and
Max was like, yeah, dude, that's the whole joke, you idiot. Like, that was a year ago today.
Yeah, it's the McBain. That is the joke. Yeah.
Nobody cared who I was till they put on the mask. All right. Explaining the spring portal window, we're gonna preview it, but first, let's talk about the rules. Max, what do people need to know about the rules and how this all goes down in this messy college football playoff or portal era?
So this is where we are now in our purge era. There are no rules. Once it begins, you can't get in trouble for anything. It's all pay for play. Tampering's cool. You can transfer as many times as you want. You know, we're kind of just descending into chaos here a little bit. Transfer portal opens up on Tuesday, April 16th, and will last for 2 weeks. And, you know, traditionally, like obviously last year, the thing that dominated the conversation throughout the spring window was Deion Sanders in Colorado and their, you know, massive roster purge. But there were some pretty big time players that went in last year. I remember the day the portal opened, I believe it was a Saturday last time, Keon Coleman and Peyton Thorne from Michigan State went in, and, Michigan State was totally fine without them. But they, you know, Keon Coleman ended up having a pretty good year at Florida State. And, there are some, the guys that go in at this time, they're probably the hype and the offers, maybe a tiny bit inflated on them just because of the scarcity. But everybody's like got a couple spots they're trying to fill. You're going to have some of those players that get run out, like we saw at Colorado, you know, the exit meeting kind of guys that just aren't going to play this fall. You'll see a lot of those kind of more unproven guys at the portal. But then, yeah, I would think that there will be some premium players that pop up. We've already seen one big one show up. And talking to personnel people this week, I think there's just a lot of curiosity. There's not a lot of like really known names out there of like, oh, I hear this guy's going in. So I think we could be in for some surprises here in the next few weeks.
Max, yeah. If you're a player who wants to transfer and maximize your value, is it better to go in the post-spring portal when there are perhaps scarcity, like you said, and you're kind of coming up against the deadline here? It's your last chance to fill a spot.
I think if you're a proven starter who like is reasonably certain that, you know, you're going to find a place where you can go start if you go into the portal. I think that it will be a little bit. Yeah, I think that financially, like, you could possibly do better in the spring than in the winter, where in December when that opens up, there's just hundreds of guys hitting all the time, and you can get lost in the flood a little bit. So yeah, I think there's probably something to that. It is obviously tougher to make a move after spring ball to go into a situation in the summer. You're kind of playing catch up at your new school. You know, even if they're guaranteeing you a spot, sometimes, you know, these guys are going in the portal and showing up to a place and it turns out like, oh, they just needed depth. They just needed a third tackle. They didn't really need me to be a starter, you know? So I think you've got to like make a good assessment of like what you're walking into. If you're these guys going in, but yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely some merit. And I think also at this time, guys, like, because we're post spring, there aren't as many players available. These coaching staffs are trying to figure out their plan for the fall. I think the losses hurt a lot more. And I think you see a lot more freakouts when big players leave, because when Caden Proctor leaves Iowa, there is not a Caden Proctor equivalent that's going to become available and go to Iowa here in the next couple weeks.
You're not replacing Keon Coleman, which did not happen.
They were fine without them. Let's go to the
Keon Coleman question. And Peyton Thorne leaving was not like a top one notable thing at Michigan State last year.
We did hit on some of these. We do have a text question that somebody submitted through the phone line. It says, hi there, question about the upcoming April transfer portal window. By the way, I don't think we said when it starts. Opens April 16th, that's Tuesday, and is through Tuesday, April 30th. So it's going to be a busy few weeks for Max. Seeing and hearing different things, can football players transfer anywhere or not within the same conference during the April window, or is that not within the same conference restriction, only certain conferences that have that rule?
The SEC players that want to transfer, in this time, they cannot, if they transfer to another SEC school, they're not going to be eligible to play this fall. So the SEC has a rule. They've been a little different in that. February 1st is their deadline. So you've got to go in the winter transfer window if you want to go to another SEC school. And again, I think that's coaches' preference to kind of protect their rosters a little bit, not have a lot of knife fights in April over starters and stuff like that. So, the SEC guys, like when Bear Alexander went in last year, you kind of knew like, okay, well, he's not going to Texas. He's not going to, or Texas A&M or some of those schools in the conference. So, that would be the one restriction, but these guys can transfer anywhere. And due to, how things are changing here, as long as they transfer in this window, they're eligible this fall.
Yeah, Nicole Auerbeck has reported that the NCAA D1 Council could adopt an emergency legislation at its next meeting next week that allows unlimited transfers as long as players meet academic requirements. That has been the temporary rule since December. We'll see how that goes. There is always going to be... I mean, I've seen people say that this is going to be the most absurd transfer portal window that we've seen to date. I don't know if that's because of the maturation of the regularity of this rule or whatever, but... we are going to talk about some teams that we think could be most active in acquiring talent or teams that have needs. And Max is the Mr. Personnel here, so we're really happy you're on the show. Some of the teams that we think could be most active. Alabama is under the scholarship limit, and Kalen DeBoer told Josh Pate that they're short at defensive backfield and offensive line. They added Keon Saab, a safety from Michigan, after Harbaugh's departure, but they have some holes to fill. What is it about Alabama that you think could be attractive? And that's a dumb question, but also something that makes them potentially lethal here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think I'm willing to put in my crystal ball. I do think Caden Proctor is going to Alabama. He is not in the portal yet, to be clear. But I think that will help to bring back a true freshman starter on the offensive line there. I think for Alabama, they were fairly active last year. In taking some pretty good G5 guys, Trey Amos from Louisiana, Jalen Key from UAB. So, that they're one of those staffs that they're not going to take very many, but they're going to have a pretty good evaluation on, hey, who are some guys that could actually, come here and get on the field, can actually play here, even if they're moving up. So, I think for Kalen DeBoer and his staff, I think they're still going to be very selective when it comes to transfers. I don't, even though Alabama had some departures, obviously, during that coaching transition. I don't think they'll go crazy, but certainly, I think them, and I honestly, I would throw Washington in there too, guys, of a staff that Just because I know Jed Fish brought his whole freshman class with him, seemingly from Arizona. But in terms of holes to fill between guys entering the NFL draft or guys going to the portal, Washington's another one, especially up front, that you know, you're gonna have some needs you got to address, and that's because these coaching changes happened later than usual.
Yeah, right. Anybody who has a coaching change, right?
Go ahead. Right. That's what in terms of an unusual cycle, Alabama, Washington, Arizona. These things trickle down, even Michigan to an extent. Like these are all coaching changes that happened after the national championship,
sure,
which is very rare. And so they were very late in that winter portal, or completely missed it, depending on when their change happened. And so there are a lot of teams here that are going to have to go through that now the first time that they didn't get to do that before. So yeah, that's one reason I think this would be a pretty eventful cycle. Perhaps one in which you'll see more group of five players move up to some of these places that didn't have those, weren't ready to grab players before.
Yeah, and I think if you got roster needs at the end of spring, which that's what everybody's trying to evaluate right now. It's just like, okay, where could we get a little bit better? And I think, honestly, guys, because of the 12-team playoff, there's just going to be probably a few more teams than usual who are like, you know, we're maybe a missing piece or two away here. Like, let's go try and get somebody. But yeah, certainly for those G5 guys, it's very tempting because the kind of money that that probably everybody on the roster is making at that SEC school is not the kind of money you're making right now, right? So I think that there's that, and we wrote about that last spring. It's very frustrating on the coaches' side at G5 schools, but that's part of the food chain here with the portal.
Another team that's in the mix for some players, or hopes to be in the mix for some players, is Miami. They didn't have a coaching change. But it's a pretty critical year for them. Per Manny Navarro's story, they could be looking for running back after leading rusher Henry Parrish announced his decision to enter the portal last week. Also, at wide receiver and defensive lineman, defensive end Nigelique Kelly entered the portal last week. Miami going into a very critical season where it's like, I kind of feel like it's win now or what the hell is going on there.
I think that's fair. Is that how you'd look at it, Chris?
Look, this is going to be what, year?
Three.
Yeah, for Mario Cristobal, who to this point has not done better than Manny Diaz did. You know, Miami invested really for the first time when Mario got there. The money that the millions they had to spend to buy him out at Oregon to bring him in and give him a big salary and give the assistants big salaries, have this gigantic NIL pool. Miami's putting in money in a way it never has before. Even those dominant teams of the 80s, they were behind on facilities and all these kinds of things. They just had players. And so, yeah, you got Cam Ward, a lot of hype around him being there. Like, this has to be a much better season for Miami, or you wonder, can this program ever get it right? Because if not, you know, a hurricane like Mario Cristobal and the money that they've put in, you know, then what is it? So, yeah, apparently they're going to need another running back or somebody to step up there. That's not exactly what you want to hear at this time of year.
Yeah, they've got some good backs, but I think it's, you know, they're going to be in the mix for some of these guys with Parrish leaving. And, you know, I think that they just have some backs that are banged up right now. But, yeah, very interested to see, you know, does Cam Ward have the pieces he needs around him? I certainly, in terms of like up front, I think it's a better situation for Cam Ward than probably what he had at Washington State. Mm-hmm. You know, to have Xavier Restrepo coming back, to have Jacoby George, like, I think there's good playmakers there. So, yeah, they're definitely one that I'm interested to see how competitive they are just in trying to add a couple more here to really put them into position to contend in the ACC.
Max, before we go in and look into some of the players that are expected to be in the portal, or some of the craziness of entering and seemingly planning to enter and then not being in that position anymore, are there any storylines or anything that you're on the radar looking at, you know, a few days before this thing opens that you're excited to see play out?
I mean, obviously the thing last year was, you saw Deion Sanders taking advantage of the rules for a first year head coach to be able to run guys off your roster. So obviously we'll be kind of looking out for, is anybody, I haven't heard like whispers that that's going to happen, but is anybody, you know, making big roster changes like we saw at Colorado? You know, as I've said before, like I think this, if this cycle is really, you know, really buzzy, really newsworthy, I think it'd probably be more quality than quantity. Cause I think most of these places have kind of you know, took what they needed. You know, the average Power 5 school has already taken more than 10 scholarship transfers this offseason. So, they've filled a lot of their spots. There's not a lot of people that really want to go into the spring portal anymore with five open scholarships and stuff. So, if you have attrition, that frees up more room. But, I think it's just it'll be curious to see, are there really big ticket kind of players that very expensive players that hit the market here that make it compelling?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Some names to watch for the portal. Damian Martinez at Oregon State. There's a lot of fallout with this particular story. Pete Thamel from ESPN reported that Martinez was set to make $400,000 at Oregon State this year, which is something that you probably rarely see. There's been a lot of backlash from Oregon State fans after he decided that he was going to be going. Do you want to talk about this mess at all?
I'm curious. Yeah, Chris, give me your thoughts on that.
So I did a story on Oregon State like 2 years ago. And I went up to Corvallis and talked to all them. I talked to the guy who was running their collective, and their main point was like, look, we know we're not going to be able to buy really good recruits. Our goal is to keep our really good players here. And Damian Martinez was coming off of the year, which he was like Pac-12 freshman of the year. They were worried about schools in Texas bringing him back home, and they were able to keep him to stay at least another year. And now he's not. And it's very weird how this happened. I don't love the way it was first reported that he's entering the portal and he was scheduled to make $400,000. Again, we don't usually see that number put out. And it was put out in a way of like, you should be mad at the kid for doing this for whatever reason. Then he texted some comments to the Oregonian saying maybe perhaps he wasn't like given everything he was supposed to be given. And then Thursday, I think, he talked to John Canzano and he said, he has no issues with the collective. He was getting $100,000 quarterly, and one of the payments was $8,000 short because it was the collective paid off like a down payment on a car or something like that. So a lot of people flipped out about this for a lot of different reasons, but I think this is a good kind of window into how these things are happening, and car dealerships and down payments and collectives and quarterly payments, and as opposed to all of it up front. Like, there's a lot you can kind of take from this in terms of just learning how this works. Is that how you read it, Max?
Yeah, I mean, look, to me, it's like, it's always just covering this as long as we have guys. Like, it's always a bummer to me to see, maybe this is just like message board, social media culture or whatever, but like the way that people turn on a kid as soon as he's leaving, I think it's tough to see. And you get it, because I mean, Damian Martinez is a guy who said repeatedly, you know, I'm staying, I'm not leaving. And so that makes these things hurt a little bit more. But, you know, from talking to people involved in this one, like he's not leaving because he was only making $400,000. Oregon State, that's great that they can afford to take care of their best players like that. That's what you want at these developmental programs, is the ability to retain your best guys and keep them out of the portal. But it's unfortunate that he's not going in the portal for the money. He's trying to, you know, be one of the top running backs selected in next year's draft. If he has a great year, I'm sure he will go pro. And, but it leads to all these people getting like all up in his business about like, how did you get this house? How did you get this car? How much money did we give him? And we saw a lot of that with Caden Proctor too. So I think that the money part of this is certainly creeping into the transaction and more and more. I don't think we will see a lot of situations where it's like, this guy is leaving and he was making this. But if we're going to see more of that in the future, it just makes this stuff much more toxic, I think.
Yeah. And also too, like, fans, when they are aware that somebody's being taken care of, probably feel more ownership over that person's future than otherwise.
And in the model we're living right now, it's asking the fans to donate money to pay Damian Martinez, right?
It's their money. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
And also those fans, they've lost their conference as the Pac-12 falls apart. They lost their coach to Michigan State, and now you're going to lose your star running back. Like, yeah, I feel bad for Oregon State fans. They've been through a lot. Washington State, similarly, they just lost their athletic director and stuff like that. So it's kind of, I think, compounding on itself. But it also, this is why you don't pay somebody $400,000 up front. You pay them quarterly, and they have to meet certain benchmarks. And that's the way these things are going now. Some of them have contracts. Some of them are maybe more handshake deals type of situations. But as we continue to get into this NIL era, everybody's kind of learning how much to give, how much not to give, benchmarks, contracts, have this stuff all set up. And based on the latest reporting, it doesn't seem like there was anything fishy there. And based on what Martinez said to Canzano, or at least alluded to, playing a Mountain West schedule next year is not as appealing.
Yeah.
For a guy. And look,
DJ came to that conclusion, Silas Bolden, Cameron Ward, like a lot of these guys in that situation at the end of 23 who were in those two schools. And to some extent, Jonathan Smith, right? I mean, I think like everybody had to look at that situation and say, like, is this untenable moving forward? So certainly Damian Martinez, it's very notable because it's happening in this window, but you know, certainly not the first person to have to make a tough decision.
Yeah.
And any thoughts early, Max, on where he may go? Does he come back to the state of Texas or anything like that? Or is it too early to kind of figure out?
Yeah, probably too early on that. From what I've heard, he will take a few visits. I don't think this is just one of those where this is a done deal. He knows where he's going, locked in. I'm guessing that when he does go in the portal, you know, he's not officially in yet because he's an underclassman. When he does go in the portal, I think he will probably get more than $400,000 for this final season or prorated or whatever you want to say. But, I think that he is, when you look at the guys who went pro, like he is one of the top returning backs in college football in terms of production and all conference, you know, and all first team, all Pac-12 kind of players. So, I think when you talk with coaches too, beyond like quarterback, edge rusher, tackle, like I think some do look at, we talked about this in the past with Quinshon Judkins going to Ohio State, but I think some do look at, look at running back as one of those positions of like, okay, well, he's going to get the ball so much that this is very impactful for our team. Like we saw with Kenneth Walker at Michigan State. Great example. It is so impactful for our team.
Jahmyr Gibbs, another one turned into a first round pick.
Yeah. Another great Detroiter. I think coaches do see, hey man, if especially if we just kind of have a stable, we don't really have a guy. I think at this time of year, a very good running back is worth a lot.
Yeah, I mean, a few schools popped into my head that would be like likely suitors. I don't know if speculation,
who
but
who you got?
I mean, I think Miami, who we Cam, just talked about, is probably going to try to get into the mix. I would think that Michigan State. I mean, the first thing I thought of is like if he goes to Michigan State and Michigan State wins 11 games, does Jonathan Smith get an 11-year guaranteed contract?
No, because the AD is still there, and the AD did not want to give him that contract, but they did. And I think the power dynamics at Michigan State have
changed. Okay, I just didn't know if they were another running back transfer leading to a good team away from the coach.
We're like 1 year, six bowl away from doing another one, you're asking?
I didn't know if they were going to re-up another unbelievably shocking guaranteed 10-year deal worth more than half the real estate in Southern California, but you know, it is kind of an interesting thing. But those were the two that kind of just jumped out to me as like, hey, that could work. But
the one, you know, again, I don't know the roster situation, but the one that jumped out to me was Texas. You know, they've lost several running backs the last couple of years.
Matt, I think they're set there, but yeah, you could certainly see. Ole Miss lost Judkins, and I think Ole Miss will be involved. They may take Henry Parrish from Miami, who'd be coming back to Ole Miss. LSU is one that they lost Logan Diggs, and don't know if they'll take one, but could see them benefiting from taking one. Miami, we've talked about before, so I think there's some pretty healthy competition here.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go on to the next one. Defensive tackle Bear Alexander. Was going into the portal for 24 hours, it seemed, and then he tweeted out he doesn't know where all of that mess is coming from. He's staying and committed to trying to win a championship at USC. They did get him a pretty sick apartment a year ago in downtown LA with a beautiful view. Right now, it seems like he's staying after all.
Yes. Bear Alexander told Hayes Fawcett he was going in the portal, and the next day he said he doesn't know where any of that came from, and he's not going in the portal and staying at USC. You know, it was notable when that rumor started coming out because just a couple weeks ago, their collective had announced that they had re-upped with Bear Alexander, a guy who made a big move last spring in going to USC from Georgia. So I think, look, despite maybe a little baggage there, I think that, you know, he was disruptive in his first season at USC. Mm-hmm. And somebody that that probably had some interesting opportunities that were approaching him. So that's a big hold for Lincoln Riley and USC if they can keep him locked in. Someone who can make a big difference for their D-line as they try to fix this.
He would have been at 7 different schools in 7 years dating back to high school had he left.
Something like that, yeah. This guy moves around a lot. I mean, what does it say that a school like USC – you know, potentially had to hold on to a really good player like that. I mean,
it's I think that the renegotiation part of this is just, it happens a ton behind, mm-hmm. you know, behind the scenes, behind the curtain here. And I've heard some of the names I've heard who may be going in the transfer portal last week include players that just joined their team in January and people in their camp are already asking for more money. So like, I think that is a thing that kind of goes on. And I've talked with coaches about this. It's a little bit of a frustration on their end that is kind of what the two windows sets up a little bit, is that you feel like guys are only locked in for a few months at a time.
We've got the unlimited transfer rules now, which because of that lawsuit from various attorneys general to create unlimited transfers now. And now the NCAA is going to codify that. That is not changing. That is about to become completely the rule. I was talking to an athletic director earlier today who was talking about their basketball team and saying like their whole team except two guys is in the portal. And it's like, this is what
did you guys see
be.
The graphic on SportsCenter of like John Calipari's Arkansas roster, and it was just a blank graphic.
This is what it's going to be every year now until you get some sort of collective bargaining with players. Like, that is not going back. And so stuff like guy coming in January, leaving it in the spring portal, we are going to see that a lot more because the rules are now allowing for that.
Yeah, it is funny too to say like locked in for only a few months at a time. And during those few months, there are no football games. So like that to me is kind of the most ironic part about this. Okay. Colin Schley at UCLA. It'll be interesting to see what other backup quarterbacks do at the end of spring in terms of making moves. Guys also worth keeping an eye on. Guys like Austin Novosad at Oregon, Ja'Kari Brown at Miami, Lincoln Keenholz at Ohio State, Nick Evers at Wisconsin. Some of these 4 or 5-star prospects that went to schools a few years ago who haven't played yet, who or have played sparingly, you know, being an attractive candidate for schools that need quarterbacks. Are there any P5 schools, Max, that need a quarterback for the fall right now that come to mind? Or is everybody set there?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Like, I think I've mentioned this before on the pod. I think the one that you're kind of like, what's the plan there is, I guess I would say Michigan. You know, I've heard from some people who are just kind of curious, like, are they going to roll with who they've got there? Or, you know, with obviously with Alex Orji and a bunch of other guys, as you guys have talked about on the pod, intriguing arms. And it's an interesting decision for Sharon Moore in year one here. Auburn, there's a few of these where you kind of wonder like, okay, are they going to stand pat and they like somebody, or they're going to look around? Remember last year, there was like for a day, it was like, oh, Tyler Van Dyke's going to go to Alabama. And it's like, oh, wait, what? And Miami was able to like, put out that fire and I'm sure pay him more money so that he would stay. And I think that kind of stuff, when that happens, it's pretty telling about like, okay, do they like what they have or not? They ended up taking Tyler Buchner, obviously, who's now playing lacrosse. But you wonder who's in the market there a little bit. But yeah, those guys you mentioned, Ari, I think are not saying all of them are going in, but I think worth keeping an eye on just as guys that are just kind of blocked by transfers in front of them. And, you know,
it would be attractive for other schools.
Yeah. Even, you know, I think some of these programs too are going to look at this market and just say like, can we go get a guy that we can bring in as a backup who will just go compete to be the guy next year? You know what I mean? I think it'll be curious to see who is kind of thinking ahead on that stuff. Because there is so much, you know, movement in the quarterback market, and there will be a ton, I'm sure, in December. So, I don't know that we'll have big stunners at the quarterback position, but As we've mentioned before, you know, you look at Michigan, you look at Ohio State, there's some of these where they've just got a lot of guys in the room.
Yeah, so, UCLA like, I was a year removed from getting Dante Moore and Schley, like, within months of each other, and now both are gone right. already.
Yeah.
I think the general theory on quarterbacks where if you have a guy leave at the end of spring, it usually means your team has its guy.
Yes.
And that's a good sign. And if you are adding somebody, then you're probably not so much. When Alabama added Tyler Buchner, we thought Alabama may have some quarterback problems. And it turned out they did. Now, Milroe eventually figured it out as the year went on, but we remember
for like 3 weeks there, we were like, oh, they've got a big problem. And then everything ended up being fine.
Yeah. So, like, there are, I think, bigger picture signs you can look at as a team as to if they get a guy, if they lose a guy. Michigan State losing Peyton Thorne last year was not a sense, it was a sense of he's not the guy.
He's not being promised the job, even as the returning starter. Like, that tells you what they thought of him. Yeah.
Yeah. And Michigan State ended up playing, I think, three different guys last year. They all went into the portal after the season. So the quarterback position changes very, very quickly. And now they've got Childs from following from Oregon State. So and Hugh Freeze still seems to be a big Peyton Thorne guy based on what he said the other day. Michigan State fans, not so much. But if your team is losing backup quarterbacks in this portal, that probably means you got a guy at quarterback, and that's a good thing.
Agreed. We already touched on Henry Parrish from Miami. Quinshon Judkins left Ole Miss. He started his career at Ole Miss. That's something to watch. Dallin Hayden, running back from Ohio State, looked really good as a runner in his brief time there, but obviously Judkins going to Ohio State. Along with Trey Henderson, there is a blockage to the field for him, but really hard runner and somebody that I know Ohio State fans were excited about in his time. And, you know, even during spurts of the last two seasons, you know, you would hear whispers of like, why isn't he carrying the ball more? I'm very curious to see where he ends up and what his career looks like. Rashad Amos from Miami of Ohio is already in the portal. Really good running back too, Max. What do you see from him?
Yeah. You know, that's a one of some of these guys, And we saw this with Penny Boone going from Toledo to Louisville as well. Some of these guys that didn't really get a chance at their first school, they go to the MAC or they go to a G5 league and they go produce, and now they want to go move back up. So Rashad Amos has started his career at South Carolina. He goes to Miami, Ohio, was the third leading rusher in the conference, third team all-conference guy, and now he's back in the portal. He's a big back and one that I think could be a good complement for some of these teams. So, yeah, Mississippi State's involved here, Miami, possibly Ole Miss. I could see him ending up in a good spot. So there's some of those just like, can you kind of add a piece and get a little bit better here? And then I think, guys, the other thing to look out for that's always like, you know, kind of the phenomenon of the spring portal is just kind of who are the G5 players that go in that suddenly people turn on the tape and they're like, oh, my God, he's amazing. So that happens every year. Anthony Dunn Jr. from Florida A&M, he's announced he's going in the portal. He's an all-SWAC. You know, one of the top all-SWAC player, one of the top edge rushers in FCS last season. So I think those kinds of players, especially if there aren't that many available, those guys end up getting a lot of offers and maybe get over recruited a little bit. So we'll see who are those G5 guys that just say like, okay, I'm ready to go prove that I should be playing at the highest level.
Max, what are you doing this weekend? Are you like
writing? I'm writing this weekend. Yeah.
I didn't know if you had like, I'm going to get some sleep too before the craziness starts. Or is the craziness already starting in your life?
That's never how it goes. It's writing until midnight on Monday, and then on Tuesday morning, the portal is open. So,
what should readers be prepared for? What kind of stuff do you got in the oven for next week?
Yes, we've got our Secrets of the Transfer Portal series going on right now on The Athletic, so people should definitely check that out. We'll have a lot of portal and NIL related stories running here over the rest of the month. A lot of, you know, Antonio Morales had a great one today on quarterback recruiting. A lot of good pieces coming, but then next week, yeah, we will we'll have our live blog on Tuesday. We'll have best available, you know, soon after the portal fills up. So lots of coverage of the craziness coming up.
Mel Kiper Jr. of the college football. But Max, we'll give you your air to breathe. Good luck this weekend. If there's anything that we can do to help you, let us know.
Speaking of Mel Kiper, do you think you could eat pumpkin pie every day of your life?
I don't.
Oh, man. That
could
is...
you?
I don't think I could, no.
Chris? Especially not pumpkin. Especially not pumpkin.
I mean, if you could
pie.
Eat one food every day for the rest of your life, what food would you choose?
I mean, like,
Chris, what do you eat the? Like, what do you on like a daily on a weekly basis? What do you like eat? What would be the thing you like eat the most on a like?
I mean, it would frequency? Be like, I don't know, like be like pizza or something. I could do apple pie every day, but pumpkin pie every day is a very specific seasonal it kind is. Of pie. I would say,
yeah,
right.
And I can't remember. I assume he puts whipped topping on it or something.
Yeah, this pumpkin is pie is kind of a peculiar thing. I'm trying to think. I mean,
this is definitely one of those like would you rathers that Ari puts up.
Yeah, it's like would
we've had these discussions.
Yeah, so. Would you take $1 billion, but you can only eat turkey sandwiches for the rest of your life? Would you do it?
Yes. $1 billion? Yes. You
but you can never eat anything but turkey sandwiches for the rest of your life.
$1 billion? You set the monetary amounts for these way too high where I'm like, yeah, absolutely. If you want to say like $1 million or like 500,000, then
you
want to
make it. All right, can we make it less money, but you have to eat one a day?
Well, if you don't eat, you die. Like it's your only nourishment, so you have to eat them every day. Like that's the thing that stinks about it. It's like, oh, you got this yacht off the coast of France. Everybody's going out to dinner tonight. You're getting a turkey sandwich. Like part of the thing.
Can I negotiate it down to like I get $5 million, but I have to eat one turkey sandwich in my foods that I eat every day.
I mean, I guess, but that's not fun.
That's not as fun. That's not, you need the stakes of death.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like you need to like, this is the only thing that you can eat for nourishment or you'll pass away. And like the only thing,
Ari,
one of the best things, what's your favorite thing about traveling? Okay. Views and new things. And then the other thing is eating the restaurant. Like eating is one of the most important things that we do as people.
Do you know how much $1 billion is?
I could say $1 trillion. The problem still exists. You can buy anything you want and do whatever you want for the rest of your life. But no matter what you eat, it has to be a turkey sandwich.
So a turkey sandwich, nothing else or $1 billion. Which one are you taking?
I don't think I would do okay with the turkey sandwich thing. I think I would lose. I think I would get sick.
$1 billion.
I think I would get sick of it too. I like, you know, I like turkey sandwiches. I had a turkey wrap for lunch today, but like, it's tough.
I'm trying to think.
$1 billion?
Like,
if you want to tell me $1 million or something, then I'll think about it.
By the way, I think this would be an awesome Instagram account of like today's turkey sandwich where you just posted.
And you could do anything you want. You could get like turkey pastrami. You could try to mix it up a little bit.
You know, all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
But when I think of what my life would be like as a billionaire, I think of Jordan Belfort on the back of the yacht with Margot Robbie, like how I would live. And it's like they have these butlers that are on there and they have these silver tins that they bring you and your beautiful wife as you're laying there, and like they open yours and it's a turkey sandwich. Like, and that's it every day for the rest of your life.
It just depends on, I guess it partly depends on, to me.
Are you saying you are throwing in Margot Robbie in this deal though?
Okay. If Margot Robbie's in the deal, I might just, you know,
you would do it if it, yeah.
Even if I died prematurely because I couldn't eat another turkey sandwich, at least I got to spend some time with Margot. I love her so much. She's my favorite actress.
We love it. Now
let's
talk about
some wrestling. Very big fan of her work. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Max. I appreciate it, and I always love it whenever you come onto the show because it always goes in one of these directions, and I love it. That's my favorite part about podcasting.
That's what we do. Thanks, guys.
All right, buddy. Take care. And now joining the show is Audrey Snyder. She's our Penn State beat writer. You can also listen to Audrey on the Nittany Dispatch podcast. All about Penn State football, get you caught up there. But we wanted to check in on Penn State because I find it to be one of the more interesting programs in college football. Thanks for joining the show, Audrey. How are you doing? It's been a long time since I've seen your face.
Long, long time, Ari. Happy to be back. I glad to be here with you because, you know, it seems like about once a year, you and I have this conversation about Drew Aller, about rankings, about how you thought he was going to be the next big guy. And I'm not sure we're going to talk about this year. Maybe something else. I don't know. You surprise me sometimes.
How's Drew Aller looking in practice?
Well, during our limited windows this spring, he's looked fine in ball security drills. Looks like a very capable quarterback in ball security drills. But we'll see Saturday. Penn State has their spring game Saturday. But here's the catch for the chuck it deep portion of the audience here. 39-mile-per-hour wind gusts projected for Saturday in State College. So we're not going to see him chuck it deep.
Chuck it deep!
Yeah. Simpler times.
It's just a damn shame. No, but I don't know. My Drew Aller takes have always been hot. Really, really
scorching.
Hot. Scorching. I'm not ready to give up, Chris. Are you? Like, I mean, what do you think of, like, where Penn State is in the development process of their quarterback, but also just, like, might be one of the most interesting programs in the country right now because they are benefiting the most from the new rule. They're always in that 13-8 range, and it looks like they're going to be right in the thick of it again this year.
I keep thinking back to, Ari, what you said 2 years ago on this pod when Penn State went to the Rose Bowl and won the Rose Bowl with Sean Clifford, and you felt that playing Drew Aller that year would have been more beneficial next year for the ultimate goal of making the playoff. We saw him last year, and I don't know if he really got better throughout the season. He looked pretty sharp in that first game against West Virginia, but as it went on, it felt like, especially in the biggest games, he was badly missing certain throws. Audrey, when you look back at his season last year, how do you grade his development? There's obviously a coordinator change. Like, how much of it was just the offense? How much of it was him? I mean, what did you make of his season?
I'm going to steal a line from James Franklin here. It was a combination of things, as he likes to say. You're right, Chris, because that West Virginia game out of the gate looked good. We did see him push the ball down the field there. But the offense was an absolute mess. I mean, I don't think they put him in a position to succeed, nor do I think that their receiving core was talented enough for them to be competitive. So, I do want to revisit that, Chris, because I had forgotten that of like Ari's
scorching
takes.
I will never forget
that. I forgot that that was one of the scorching ones. And here's the thing, though, Ari. Ari, I think now we can definitely say, after watching this offense for the last 2 years, it didn't matter, right? Like, I don't think they were going to be any better off because Mike Yurcich's offense was such a mess that it would not have mattered if it would have been Drew Aller, Sean Clifford. I think we still would have gotten a coordinator change because it was that bad. Now, sorry, I think Ari's not... Is he taking that well?
I think that I am wondering whether or not Penn State fans, after they lost the two only important games on their schedule last year, are probably like, well, thank God we won the Rose Bowl last year.
Like, yeah, but sure that's like a story for them for many years, not just last year. Like, that is the narrative. I mean, I see it in the comments section of every story I write, and it's, hey, what does it matter, Audrey, if they can't win the big games? And that's kind of the interesting point that they're at here. I will say there is optimism because there has to be because it's April, right, and it's a new offense. But Andy Kotelnicki coming from Kansas, his creativity, what he's known for being able to get guys in space, tailor an offense actually to what this group does best, which I think is going to be the running backs because Nick Singleton, Catron Allen should be really good. Players have said throughout the course of interviews this spring that they're excited by the offense. They like the offense. It's simpler to digest, which is where I think stuff started to go off the rails previously. And also the fact that it's working in practices, which I don't know, maybe now people are going to get up in arms about the defense because that's always how these things go. But yeah, lots of eyes are going to be on Drew Aller, and understandably so. I still think there's the build with him, right, that obviously you can't teach. There are certain traits with him that I still think the elite guys have and do well, but we just have not seen him put it all together. And Ari, you said that this is maybe, I think, you framed it as like one of the most intriguing programs. I think Drew Aller might be one of the most intriguing players just because of all that surrounds him and obviously the recruiting pedigree and what's at stake for this program.
Well, I know that there were times last year where Drew Aller looked like much worse than we anticipated that he would be at that point in his career. Mm-hmm. But we also have to acknowledge the fact that their receivers weren't very good last year. And in a world where most of the best teams in the country last year had explosive dynamic receivers, Penn State just did not have that. Dante Cephas transferred to K-State, and he wasn't the playmaker that we thought he was supposed to be at this time last year. And then Keandre Lambert-Smith and Tyler Warren, the two teams' leading receivers a year ago, are back, but neither of them had 700 yards. Like, what does the skill position players offensively look like? And, you know, does Kotelnicki being in the mix now with another year of experience with Aller, like, are there going to be anybody to help these guys out?
Well, Ari, we're going back in the vault for a name from a guy from your previous life as an Ohio State beat writer. Julian Fleming. He is supposed to be the guy this year. That's kind of what's been hyped up since he transferred in January. So you get 1 year with Julian Fleming, who's had injury issues throughout his career. He's got a year to get it right here. Penn State has that opportunity. And I will say, because it's kind of the storyline on our beat this week, is Keandre Lambert-Smith was not at practice Wednesday night, which, again, in this era, could mean something, could mean nothing. Right, transfer portal opens next week, so I know that fans are a little bit concerned about that. We'll see Saturday at the spring game. Kind of, we haven't heard from Keandre since late last year, so hard to figure out what he's thinking and kind of what it means for him with them bringing in Julian Fleming. But yeah, there are a lot of questions in this receiving corps still. Harrison Wallace is the guy that I think can be really good, but again, like Fleming, it's the health piece. I mean, Wallace was banged up for most of last year, so I still am not sold on this receiving core, and to me, that's the interesting thing here. But I do think Kotelniki's creativity with these running backs, I think we're going to have to see them get usage that way. Tyler Warren, tight end, is a really intriguing X factor for them. This guy was a high school quarterback as well, so it's a really unique skill set there to work with. But yeah, the receiving core has been the story around here the last few years.
So Aller last year also started to look panicked back there, seeing pressure, expecting pressure. Sometimes it was there, sometimes it wasn't. But it was generally a pretty good offensive line last year. Yeah. They have lost several starters from that group. That group is as important as any for Aller's development. How do you see that offensive line looking this year?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Chris, because it feels like it had always been Penn State. They got to figure out, you know, the offensive line, right? That's been
It was so bad for so long
as the sanction era. They rebuilt this thing, but they always had like some pretty good receivers come through here, right? You had your Allen Robinsons, those types of guys, your Deshaun Hamiltons. Like, you had productive receivers come through here, but then all of a sudden the receiving core disappeared. But then you had this good offensive line with an offensive tackle in Olu Fashanu, who's probably going to be a top 10 pick here later on this month. And now it's like, oh yeah, we got to think about the line again, because you hadn't had to worry about them for a few years because they've been pretty solid. So, I mean, left tackle is going to be an interesting spot, where Drew Shelton is the projected starter, but he's been out all spring, had a procedure done at the end of last year, cleanup procedure, but he should be fine. So you say, okay, still a younger guy. Played a lot of football here, but hasn't been thrust into being the left tackle for an extended period of time. So you have that. Then you got the right tackle spot, where you got to figure that out. So you brought in Nolan Rucci from Wisconsin. Again, another Pennsylvania guy that Penn State could not get the first time around. In all the wonderful star rankings with Julian Fleming, with Nolan Rucci, Penn State fans now get both of these big-time Pennsylvania guys back at the end of their careers. And now that they're hoping they can kind of like revive this program. So Rucci is going to be in a competition with Anthony Dunko at right tackle, which will be interesting. You've got a new starting center as well, which still has to be decided. So yeah, Chris, I think you bring up a good point, because while we're also focused on that receiving corps, you do have to think about the offensive line again, which has not been the case the last couple of years.
You know, I think it's interesting, and we can get, you know, back into the nuts, and I guess we can get back into the nuts and bolts. But what I think is interesting here, Audrey, is Penn State is at the intersection of like good and elite at all times. Mm-hmm. Like, they're never a bad team. They're always in a position to pummel the teams that they face that are, you know, overmatched. They don't really lose a ton of games that you don't expect them to lose, but they don't really win the games that they could win against elite teams. And I think that they are right, like I said earlier on in the show, in that intersection between 13 and 8 in the rankings every year. And they are probably going to be the biggest beneficiary of all programs in college football with this new 12-team playoff era. And Penn State, funny enough, has always been the team that I've used as my example of why I didn't like the expansion, because I'm like, you're just going to reward teams that never are good enough by changing the score and allowing teams that weren't good enough in the 4-team field just to backdoor in. What is your take on the way that Penn State fans are embracing or, you know, excited for this new era? And how do you think the dynamic of how they view James Franklin will change if the program stays pretty much the same, but they start making the playoff now?
That is a great question, Ari. That's actually one I'm looking forward to digging into this weekend, because you're going to have thousands of people here for the spring game. So I'll be doing some reporting in the parking lots, because it is a really interesting point, because here you are, is just getting into the playoff going to be enough for this fan base? I don't know, right? Is getting in and losing in the first round, like, does that solve anything? To me, this is where, obviously, you want to hope that you can kind of catch lightning in a bottle, get in, you're hot at the end of the year, go on a run. But I don't know if getting in is simply good enough, right? Like, yes, the expanded Big Ten also is going to help, because you don't have to worry about playing Ohio State and Michigan every year, right? So you have that. But then again, of these new teams, like, you're going to cycle through years where, you know, USC is really good, or maybe UCLA gets to that point, right? Washington's going to be rebuilding and reloading. They come to Penn State this year. Who knows with Oregon, right? So to me, I don't think getting in is going to satisfy people just enough to say, hey, great, we made the expanded playoff. I mean, if you get in and then get your ass kicked in the first round, right? Like, what's the point? I mean, I think you look at last year. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, if you make it, I think the first couple years, people will be happy with making it.
You think
because
so?
Because it's
the
new
novelty. Yeah. Of it, yeah.
Yeah. Penn State made the playoff. We're happy with making it. After Cringe. A couple of years, that's no longer the expectation. I just think fans will react that way. If Penn State makes the playoff, loses in the first round, it will still feel like, in your head, a step forward, at least at the beginning.
Yeah, it's fake. It's a fake success. But yes, I guess if you want to trick yourself into thinking that's your prerogative.
I don't know, because I mean, again, here we are in April and I'm getting questions in my mailbag about, you know, will James Franklin ever be on the hot seat around here? What's it going to take? I mean, I do think it's a fan base that in many ways is fed up, but also in many ways, I think it takes for granted what it has. And I think Ari was touching on that a little bit earlier when you said, you know, they're always competitive, right? They're always in the mix. They don't often lose to the teams that they shouldn't. I don't think fans should lose sight of that, right? Like, you got to keep that in mind, because the grass isn't always greener, right? This sport changes. Penn State recruits pretty well, right? You're never going to be kind of at that highest clip, but you're recruiting pretty darn well. And I say this on a day when they just got a commitment from a 4-star running back in Alabama. So there we go, right? This is I knew that would get Ari, like, that would get his attention.
I'm perked up. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you get a 4-star back from Alabama, so you have that. But again, I still am not buying it that people are going to be happy just getting in. I say that too after you're coming off the Peach Bowl where it was ugly. I mean, it was, the offense looked horrible. Everyone was in transition, so you can kind of blame it that way. You had all these opt-outs after we were told leading up to it that all these guys were going to play, that the expectation was they'd play, and all these guys didn't. So again, that left a sour taste in people's mouths, and maybe that's kind of been driving some of this conversation. But I don't know, Ari, would you be satisfied if you were a Penn State fan and they got in and couldn't beat a really good team?
I don't know. No, I wouldn't be satisfied, because it's the same thing that's already happening. They just get to play an extra game because the rules changed. And the thing that's kind of frustrating for me, at least with Penn State, and you and I have had these conversations over the years, dating back to the days where you and I were standing on the Ohio Stadium sideline and saw Julian Fleming wearing an Ohio Against the World t-shirt when Penn State was in.
And now he's back.
Is that Penn State is not very far off. Like, that's the thing. It's like they're a very good football team. And like, they might have been, like, I know this probably was never reality and couldn't have happened, but like, if Marvin Harrison Jr., who is from the state of Pennsylvania, was on Penn State's roster last year, they might have made the playoff. And it's like, that to me is so close.
I think if anybody would have had Marvin Harrison Jr., right?
No, I'm just saying, like, it's not, the guy went to high school 3 hours away from Penn State. And I understand that beating Ohio State and Michigan on the field is tough in and of itself, but winning those recruiting battles against those guys is also very tough.
Kyle McCord also went to the same high school 3 hours from here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know how that would have happened, but the thing about keeping the people home is that more often than not, especially at skill position players, it's going to help you more than it's going to hurt you, even on the misses. And my whole thing with James Franklin has always been to get better. Not like the system is coming down to Penn State. Penn State's not going up to the system. And like, it is just kind of a weird situation to me because James Franklin got this 10-year God contract during a time in which the fan base was kind of low on him. Like, you don't really see a coach sign a contract like that during a time in which half the fan base would be
well,
like,
well, and the athletic
later.
Director was also on the way out. So, yeah, it's
I know, but
like,
it's just
hey,
a weird
a
scenario because, like, is James Franklin ever going to be on the hot seat? Maybe in a decade, but not right now. And, you know, it's just all these different moving – do these different moving pieces happening during a time where the sport is changing so much. Penn State is a truly fascinating program.
I think you think they're – closer than they are. I don't think if you put Marvin Harrison on that team, they make the playoff. That offense was putrid.
Bad.
Really bad in the way that one player doesn't fix it. And I think when
one
you compare
dynamic
it to,
player who cannot be covered fixes what some of the issues that they had last year.
I mean, they had quarterback problems, they had play calling issues. Ari, they called the freaking swinging gate 2-point conversion call.
I mean James Franklin once threw a fade route to a 5'9" receiver with a game on the line. Like, that's not like it. Like,
Ari will not forget that.
I'll never forget that for the rest of my life.
Whose fault is it that Penn State didn't have enough quality receivers last year? When a team like Michigan has a Roman Wilson who wasn't much of anything at the beginning, and Michigan just won the national championship recruiting at arguably a worse level than Penn State, but
no,
it developed.
It's not arguably.
Yeah. So, like, it developed players to that spot. And it's like, time and time again, yes, that Penn State Michigan game was not as close as it seemed. Mm-hmm. Even though it was a one-score game for a while because Michigan ran the ball 30 straight times.
Neither the Michigan
game.
Or Ohio State games were as close as they seemed, but the scoreboard made them within reach.
Right. So it's like, how much of that was Michigan knew they could just run the ball 30 times and they'd be okay?
Was that the game they ran 36 times in a row?
Yeah. Well, and so it's so, like, I don't know. I feel like it's not like one thing fixes it for Penn State. There's a reason they have a new offensive coordinator as well.
Three new coordinators, offensive, defenses, special teams. But I think what got lost in the mix a little bit last year because the offense was so bad was that the defense was really, really good. And mm-hmm. so you just could not match these things up at the same time. And that to me is the unfortunate part in all of this was like, you just needed to have a competent offense last year against Ohio State because this, you know, obviously was not the most powerful Ohio State team. And I had said that all offseason that I thought Penn State could, you know, hang with Ohio State and even beat them, but the offense was just that bad. And so I think, you know, you do have that optimism now this time around. But yeah, Ari, you say they're fascinating. Fans would say they're frustrating. I would say they're just kind of stuck on repeat.
Frustrating is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And during a time with all these changes happening, it's certainly a program that we should be watching. Audrey, thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate your time on the podcast and the great work that you do. If you're a Penn State fan who does not subscribe to The Athletic and likes to read about their favorite team, you're mismanaging your priorities, and you should sign up to read Audrey at The Athletic. Thanks so much, Audrey. Hope you're doing well.
You got it. Take care.
Thanks again to Audrey Snyder for joining the show. I love talking to her. Love talking about Penn State. It's going to be a topic of conversations throughout the offseason and into the season for obvious reasons. Chris, now's the main event. Ding, ding, ding. What's that bell? Like, did they do the bell? Or is that only
it's
boxing?
It's literally a bell.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yes.
Let's
it's a bell.
Get ready to rumble. Do they do that still?
No, they don't do Michael Buffer, no. But, okay. But they do have a ring announcer. They do have a ring bell. Ari, did you watch WrestleMania over the weekend? I know you did, right?
Yeah, it was my favorite thing I did this weekend.
Yeah. I invited you to come with me to a SmackDown show a couple weeks ago in Dallas, but you were too busy and you missed out on The Rock. So
I'm so sorry. I've never sat through a wrestling show. I can't name more than three wrestlers, as we talked about earlier in the show. But I am fascinated a little bit about the wrestling culture and how passionate the fans are and like how they've remained relevant. And not just relevant, but seem to have thrived in recent years, despite the fact this has been around for a long time and isn't a sporting event in the sense that the results aren't predetermined. And you covered WrestleMania. You know a lot about college football. You know a lot about wrestling. You still do the show Getting Over, the podcast?
Yes, I do the Getting Over Wrestling podcast. So Ari calls me a couple days ago and he says, hey, if I have you on the podcast, we talk 10 minutes about what college football can take from WrestleMania. Would you be able to do that? I said, yes. I've got a large list of things to get into, and we're going to keep it to about 10 minutes.
Cam, the producer, was on speakerphone, and he didn't know he was there. And I just wanted to test Chris, and because we were deciding whether or not this would be worth a segment. And I said, Chris, what can college football learn from WrestleMania? And he goes, thought you'd never ask, and like rattled off 8 things. And I thought it was kind of interesting. So, Chris, I'm going to let you cook here. What can college football learn from WrestleMania? WWE president Nick Khan is a former super agent for the CAA, worked with Jimmy Sexton, was the agent for Kirk Herbstreit, Colin Coward, and Mike Greenberg. I know there's some connections there. Why don't you take us into WWE land and fill us in on this?
So there's like 3 major areas I think I would just focus on. One is the ability to create stars. 2 is live events. And 3 would be like general marketing. But as you mentioned, Nick Khan, former big-time agent in the media world and coaching world, he was a media consultant. He did the ESPN SEC media rights deal a number of years ago. He did the WWE's media rights deal, and then got hired as a executive at the company about that. WWE is now owned, as of last year, by Endeavor. They were the Big 12 media rights consultant for their deal. And I just came earlier today from the introductory press conference for the new American Athletic Conference Commissioner, Tim Pernetti. He comes from IMG Academy, which is, or was, part of Endeavor. These are the kinds of people that are running all of sports in general and are making more and more inroads into college football. And I would start with this. To me, I could not understand that Caleb Williams was not a bigger star last year. Returning Heisman Trophy winner, going to be the number one pick. And like outside of some Dr. Pepper commercials, like I felt like we didn't see him very much. And to me, like the last time college football had a big star, it was like maybe like Johnny Manziel, like a decade ago. And as you look at women's college basketball and their ability to create stars the last couple of years, you get the ratings that they get. What do you think, like star power in college football? Do you think that can be a thing, should be a thing, is not a thing? I mean, like since Johnny Manziel, is there anybody you feel like who has just been on that like Tim Tebow level where everybody knows about them and talks about them?
Well, here's the thing I want to know from you when you talk about this. Like I think of like guys like Cam Newton and Reggie Bush and Vince Young. Tommy Frazier was a little bit before my time. But some of the guys that were superstars, and Johnny Manziel was a superstar for as much as the way that he acted off the field. I think there's a lot of the party gambling autograph, you know, show me the money sign stuff that appeals to people between the ages of 18 and 23. Do you think there's anybody in college football that has possessed the star power? You know, and I think that the women's basketball thing is interesting because I don't watch women's basketball. But I found myself very much interested in the women's Final Four because of Caitlin Clark and the storylines that happened. And I know there's a lot of people who think that, you know, women's basketball has come a long way, and it certainly has. But I think the reason it has is more organic because of the stars that it has in it and not because we created it. You know what I mean? And like, I don't know what the blueprint is, but they didn't make Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark might be the best women's basketball player of all time, and that is inherently interesting. So like Caleb Williams, for instance, was a very good football player. And I know that he has interesting fashion sense, but what was it about Caleb Williams in general that would make him a star that kind of is in the same light as a Tim Tebow or a Johnny Manziel? And is that the failure of the infrastructure of college football, or is that just not having the right personality to shine in that thing? Because like Johnny Manziel is a very charismatic, interesting person. And people still are interested in him, even though he's not playing anything. I think that the personality and the talent has to match up in a perfect storm in order to create that. And I'm very interested with women's basketball next year because it was such a fun and entertaining Final Four whether or not people are going to be lining up to watch it again next year without Caitlin Clark in the sport. You know, like that to me is the thing. So you can name out the most transcendent people that have played in college football and other sports. Caitlin Clark is probably the biggest sport that's ever played women's basketball. But is that a thing that was cultivated, or is that a natural phenomenon that occurs when something special comes along?
I think it's both. And I think when you have a player at Caitlin Clark's level, you see ESPN investing at another level, having people around her all the time, doing special stories and documentaries and whatever about her, like leaning into that type of stuff. And WWE has always been good at trying to find that next star. Now, obviously, they control storylines, they control all the stuff. So, like, they pick a guy, they have to make him the star. But what happens when you lose The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin? Or what happens when you lose Hulk Hogan? You eventually get around to Stone Cold Steve Austin. What happens when you lose him? You eventually get around to John Cena. What happens when you lose him? Now you're at Roman Reigns. Now you've crowned Cody Rhodes. Like, you got to find, like, in wrestling, it's always the biggest stars that draw the money. They bring in the fans and it lifts everybody else up. And college football, the ratings have been good. Attendance is up. And not to say college football is in a bad place at all, but pro wrestling markets its stars in an unbelievable way. The merchandise that they have at these stores, they have like Logan Paul wigs, all the stuff you can think of. And in college football, I feel like all we have is like a jersey, you know, like what in the future, in this NIL world, what other things could Johnny
Manziel
have done?
They could have been selling like Quinn Ewers mullets when he had.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff like these kinds of ideas of like, make these people bigger names. So then you don't have NFL draft people come around in the spring and be like, whoa, did you guys know this player is actually pretty good? Well, yeah. Us college football fans have been watching him for a really long time. So that's one thing. The other part of it is live events. WrestleMania, obviously a very, very big show. I've always felt like the college football playoff national championship game should be a much bigger event. You've got some commissioners that will fly in for playoff meetings and then leave, but you don't have like all the ADs come in. You don't have all the coaches come in, top players. I've always wished they could have a Super Bowl Radio Row, have Caleb Williams come in and do a bunch of interviews for some sponsor he's got, like those types of things. And college football just really can't do that, partly because of the calendar, partly because of other certain things. But you come away from an event like WrestleMania thinking like, man, college football can make its national championship, like the Final Four even, which is a major event. Ari, you've been at a couple national title games, I think. Like, does it feel like a big deal when you're there?
I mean, we were there together last year, and
yeah,
it did not feel like it was. I mean, people were all there for the stuff, and I know the fan event stuff was pretty big at the convention center we went to, but no, I think that there could be another level of marketing there that makes it more of an event the entire city shares in. Did you feel like Houston like was embracing college football last year?
Not. I mean, to the extent that it could in L.A. the year before, even, which was a little weird. Not a lot of people at the fan events, at least that I saw at the time. But I do think the calendar is a weird part. The coaches are out recruiting. Players are in the portal. It's not like the NFL in that sense. But you know, college football is weird. It feels like its biggest moments are at the beginning and then like Thanksgiving weekend. And then the postseason has always kind of been secondary because it's to some people not the most important thing in the sport. And then it ends up happening around New Year's and people are busy and yada yada. But now that we've got a national championship game that's going to be in late January, like there's opportunities, I think, to do other things. And WrestleMania is an example of something.
So what was WrestleMania's aura when you went to Philly this weekend? Like what did you see about WrestleMania that you didn't see in Houston when we went to the title game together?
That everybody is there just like, no, look, and I know it's a scripted event. You're not being like necessarily being like, ugh, I hope my team wins. I'm nervous. But there was an extent of that to the Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes main event where the Roman Reigns fans were talking trash to the Cody Rhodes fans. And when that main event started, as they did the entrances, I felt like I was at a big game. Like I felt like we were about to kick off a national championship game. Like that's the kind of aura I felt in Lincoln Financial Field. And it was just a special environment that you have to create for fans so they want to come to the event, so they want to spend money on merchandise, so they know here's the big star that we follow. And there's a lot of different avenues to growing the game in another way that I think college football can still do. And I know there's a lot of people are going to say college football's fine, why do these people always want to change it, yada yada yada. I'm not saying change the game, I'm just saying, some of these things, individual players as stars, national championship game, college football, I said this spring has been completely overwhelmed by the basketball tournament and by the NFL draft. And college football needs to be able to carve out its own space and culture. I think the video game coming back will be a big part of that.
Here's my number one thing that I think stops it. And you tell me, in college football, the stars are kids. And I do think that in the NIL era, when they are becoming more and more marketable, you know, my hope was that their personalities would shine through. But you've been to enough media availabilities. I covered a very big program for a long time. There is something about college football, whether it be the way that they're expected to act or their age or the dynamic between power of the coach and the player, where I think most college football players are more apprehensive to allow themselves to be themselves out into the public eye that you don't really see. Like Jason Kelce became the most famous offensive lineman ever because people liked watching him chug beers in public and play beer pong in the stands, watching his brother play. Like Travis Kelce is one of the biggest stars in the world now because he's dating Taylor Swift. Like, I don't know if the opportunity to weave into pop culture seamlessly the way it does in other adult sports presents itself. And I don't know what the solution to that is, but who was the last college football player that was a star that you felt like you actually knew? Like, I think you go back to Johnny Manziel, like he was the most unapologetically himself player that we've had maybe in my lifetime. And Tim Tebow was another one for very different reasons, but they were themselves. Who does that?
And Manziel, by the way, he didn't talk to media that year he won the Heisman because Texas A&M didn't allow freshmen to talk to the media. I'll say a big reason is because coaches have remained the stars of the sport. And I'm surprised that in the NIL era, I thought we would get more star players out of that because they could do commercials, because they could do all kinds of things. And it hasn't really happened yet. We've had players make
a lot of money. Everybody knows who Aaron Rodgers is. Does everybody know who the New York Jets head coach is?
Right. I'm surprised in these last couple of years that college football has not been able to cultivate the star power with the players like it had with the coaches. And that could mean players doing more media on their own because they want to market themselves and they want to be out there and do kinds of stuff. So it's been interesting.
It's like Johnny Manziel was taking pictures with Drake in Las Vegas nightclubs.
Right.
Like he got to a certain level, and I can't recall if that was while he was playing or after he left, but he reached a level of pop culture that nobody in college football has reached in the time since. And I don't know if that's a NCAA marketing issue or if that is lack of dynamic personality or lack of dynamic personality that also was coincidentally in a situation in a system where it's allowed to shine through.
I think it's a combination of all of that.
Yeah. So anyway, if you like wrestling and you listen to the show, make sure you're following Chris. He did a very good job covering WrestleMania for The Athletic. I know that if he wasn't covering it, he would have loved to be there. Just because he loves the sport. I think that's great. So I'm happy that you were here. I'm happy we had that discussion. And college football and the growth of its stars, I think, is an ongoing, interesting thought. So thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. Thanks to Max Olson and Audrey Snyder for joining the show today. A lot of interesting stuff there. The portal does open up next week, so stay tuned with The Athletic and Until Saturday as we continue on into the offseason. Also, leave us a voicemail on our Until Saturday phone line for future mailbag episodes. That's 316-462-9852. We always love to hear your voices, and the participation really adds to the show. Be sure to follow the podcast on Apple or wherever you listen to your podcast. Please leave a 5-star review. It helps the show's growth. Any way that you can interact with our show and help it with the algorithms that be, it's certainly appreciated. Enjoy your weekend, last sane weekend before the portal, and we will catch you guys on Until Saturday next week. Thanks again.